This is the gateway to Hong Kong. At least it was for us in the summer of 1973. I had to go to the British consulate in Miami twice before we could get our visas to work in their colony for a year as pastor of Bethany Baptist Chapel in Kowloon, Hong Kong. You can readily believe it took some persuasion for the Lord to move us away from this little bit of paradise on Lake Joanna near Mount Dora, Florida. And had we known from the first that our 18-year-old son David was not going to go with us, we might have thought of more reasons why we shouldn't go. Leaving Poco, the one with the long white hair, was bad enough. Our daughter Lee and her son Jesse came to help us make our decision. But David found his new job in a VW garage and his independence too desirable to leave. Hong Kong is no place for an American teenager, so we feel the Lord was in that decision. So we crowded in a few last memories of Daytona Beach on a summer day as we set up our little umbrella tent and picnicked. And there were some rather sad farewells to the quiet solitude of a sunset seen from our own handmade dock that we had built and loved. We knew we weren't going to know such peace and quiet for many months, and although the Lord was to provide graciously for us, the knowledge that we had this to come back to would help through many trying days. And Jesse composes a farewell piano concerto, complete with words yet. Then Virginia and I flew out to California and visited with dear friends in Carlsbad. A reception was held at Grace and Pierce Davis's lovely home, and this cake with my verse that I had chosen for Union Church when I became pastor for a year, well, it just about broke me up. Oh yes, the year somehow got extended a little bit. But posing with Virginia and Peggy Vosburgh, my natural radiant charm reasserts itself, as Paul Walker nearby can testify, if he'll stop drinking, that is. Flying space available from Travis Air Force Base near San Francisco to Hawaii, Guam, Philippines, Taiwan, and finally to Hong Kong. We walked through these gates for the first time on the 20th of June. This is 19 Kent Road, Kowloon Tong. We discovered that instead of the cramped apartment we expected we were to have, the whole upstairs of a beautiful home set in a walled yard with flowers and trees and a lawn. From every large 10-foot high casement window, a lovely view. This is looking from our back porch. Climbing that hill part way, we can look down on the lovely home set in trees, which is to be our neighborhood. It's unique in all of Hong Kong. Not many are so fortunate. At the top of that hill, you can look across to Lion Rock Mountain and how our kids enjoyed this hike. With a view to the south of Kowloon stretching out to the harbor and across to Victoria Island and Hong Kong and Lion Rock Tunnel underneath us. And to the north, Sha Tin and the New Territories, and on to mainland China. I think we were good for our young people because most had never had an opportunity to explore their own native city and its environs. But we made opportunities for them, and they loved it. Our living room, we discover, is spacious, fortunately. For here we hold meetings often for large groups, evening communion services, monthly prayer meetings of all missionary personnel and all Chinese workers, Bible study classes, children's Bible clubs, and as here, a planning session for Vacation Bible School to be held in some of our rooftop schools. One of God's extra bonuses for us was to have Dr. and Mrs. Griffin Henderson teaching in Baptist Seminary here. Griff and Ducky are beloved friends from World War II days when he was a Navy chaplain. That was before he backslid or went back to earning an honest living. But I stayed with it, and while he has to work hard as a seminary professor, I can sit and relax and talk to the ladies. Soon after our arrival, we got to visit one of our rooftop schools. In fact, we were guests of honor at graduation exercises. Here, Margaret Douglas presents one of the groups as they bow. I don't know the Chinese word for valedictorian, but I think she was it. Anyway, she made a speech. This is taken from one of the windows of that school, which is really not on the rooftop, but on the first two floors of one of the estates. Being new, I thought that this was congested. That same week, we went to one of the clinics sponsored by Conservative Baptists and run by Dr. Doyal Lam, a Chinese doctor. As you can see, he doesn't lack for patients. This is Dr. Lam. He introduced us to many interesting Chinese customs, dim sum, mooncakes, and the Chinese art of present giving in general. And here I play a dirty trick on a little patient who doesn't want to be shot, either way. Larry Allen, who isn't at all as grim as he looks here, introduces me and some of our young people to the hiking trails on the islands around Hong Kong. He and Arthur Chung, a junior at the University of South Carolina who was home for the summer, stand on the bow of the junk we rode to Lama Island, seen in the distance. Dorothy Leung and Arthur stand in the main thoroughfare of the fishing village where we landed. As you can see, it had rained and would rain again. But the trail, though muddy, wound through some lovely farm country to a secluded beach. Dorothy and Nancy Lee and Esther Leung sit on a rock above the sea and sing, trying to lure unwary sailors, perhaps. Shortly after arriving, I discovered another old Navy chaplain friend, Hayden Lamp, who had relieved me years ago in Pensacola. He is now retired and serving as chaplain at Fenwick Pier, the place where all U.S. Navy men come ashore in Hong Kong. He wanted to go to the States for 6 weeks, so I relieved him and spent several mornings a week on the waterfront. This is the main reception area. This is the pool room and lounge. They have a real American-type snack bar with jukebox and hamburgers and milkshakes and the whole bit. And they have a patio overlooking the harbor and the ships tied up like the USS Oriskany. Fenwick Pier was built by American church groups, and the National Council of Churches furnishes the chaplains. That's the reefer ship USS Mars in the distance. And here a U.S. destroyer anchors right off the pier. My sister Betty came on July the 9th and stayed for 6 weeks. We found that Arthur knew very little about his native city, so we took him to see the sights like Cat Alley and Ladder Streets in Hong Kong. Griff and Ducky Henderson took us for several excursions in their trusty VW Bug. Here we explore the new territories. The Chinese University of Hong Kong is out there high on a mountainside overlooking Tolo Harbor, which we were to explore many times by ferry boat. And this is the chapel at the university. You can see it is a beautiful school and a most spectacular sight. In Tai Po, they showed us where the Baptist Church is being built. You can see a train passing on its way to Canton, China. The border is just a few miles away. The new territories is farming country right down to the ocean. This man is watering his plants with the two large buckets that he carries across his shoulders. We stop for a picnic lunch in this beautiful, practically deserted park. It's hard to visualize that just a few miles away is communist China, where such a thing would be unthinkable. Of course, for most of the millions of Hong Kong, it's almost as unthinkable too. This is the view from that picnic spot. Wealthy British families probably live in the homes that you can see down below, although there are very wealthy Chinese also here. Hong Kong has extreme wealth and extreme poverty, beauty and ugliness beyond imagination. In August, Larry Allen and some of our high school boys go with me again to Lama Island. This time, just because it was raining 2 inches every 6 hours, none of the girls showed up. But it stopped long enough for us to go swimming without getting rained on. The boys are in the water in the distance, staying dry, while Larry contemplates his imminent return to the United States. One of the places the Lantau ferry goes is Chung Chau. It's an island which has a quaint little village that just waits to be explored. I understand it used to be a pirate hangout. This is Silvermine Bay on Lantau Island. It's a very popular resort with a nice beach, trails to ride rental bikes on, and interesting hikes. That mountain in the background is one that I hiked across with the Jennings family the day after Christmas. What a view from up there. Farther up on top of Lantau, many missionaries have summer camps. It's not all hardships. On one of the hottest days of the summer, we took Betty to the Botanic Gardens on the side of the peak above Hong Kong. We had an awful time finding it because it's not commercial enough to attract tourists, and the taxi drivers don't know where it is. It's a beautiful park with shady walks and places to sit and look out over the harbor. You can see the tallest building in the Orient in the background. I think it's 50 stories high. On up the peak at the top of the incline railway is the new lookout building with shops and restaurants, and a view of the world's most beautiful harbor, and the world's most wonderful wife looks toward Kowloon, where we live, way back against the mountains. Also on a very hot day, Griff and Ducky take us to Lo Wu in the New Territories, where we are permitted our closest approach to the Chinese border. That's a Gurkha policeman directing traffic. They make some of the world's finest soldiers or police. After all, who'd argue with him? Out in the same general area, we pass this reminder that this is a British garrison. Notice anything unusual about this tank? You would if you lived in Hong Kong. There is a learner driver tag on the front. You notice the red and white tag on the rear of the yellow car? That's a learner driver. So is the one parking in front of him, and so is the one in front of him, and so is the one turning around in the middle of the street. It's a very difficult and expensive thing to acquire a driver's license in Hong Kong. These people are part of the army of those trying constantly. All day from before daylight until late at night, our street looked like this or far worse, as God's little people, as we call them, patiently practiced parking, turning in the middle of the street, and putting little dents in cars foolish enough to be parked there. But at least they can dream of getting a license and joining the world's craziest traffic jam someday. Can you imagine American drivers having the patience to wait while all these people practice turning around in the middle of the street? Meanwhile, up at the border, which you can see behind Griff in Virginia and my sister Betty and Ducky, they can't even hope for such a privilege. That's China beyond those rice paddies. There are communist guardhouses all along over there to see to it that would-be car owners don't make it across there alive. I guess it does help traffic congestion somewhat. Over Griff's left shoulder, you can see the shoreline of the river that marks the final boundary. Those are fish and duck farms in the foreground. And then to show you what the well-dressed capitalist imperialist wears on such a hot day, I had my picture taken with a typical American CIA spy. One of our favorite members at Bethany was Boris Chu, who invited us to come to see him. This is not a custom here because so few have any private space of their own to entertain. Boris is more fortunate than most because he is a retired civil servant. He parachuted behind Japanese lines with American troops during World War II. He was an interpreter for us and still thinks America invented heaven. You should hear his testimony about how a Navy chaplain with U.S. Marines in Shanghai first spoke to him about Jesus Christ, and then watch his face light up as he sings a bit of the Marine hymn. It really seems like a hymn when he does it. Festivals are a great part of Hong Kong life. They will decorate for one on the slightest pretext. This is a large office building decorated for the Festival of Hong Kong, which took place just before the energy crisis put an end to such displays. A communist department store on Nathan Road, Kowloon, dresses up for the anniversary of the founding of the Republic. October the 10th is known as Double Tenth. Another store facing the Star Ferry proclaims the proletarian millennium's glories while raking in the capitalist dollars as fast as they can. And of course, the Communist Bank in Hong Kong Central District must proclaim its preference for communism to capitalism, which makes about as much sense as a lot of things here. It's significant that this estate is decorated for the same celebration with the nationalist Chinese flags and decorations. Most of these people are refugees from China to whom Taiwan and Chiang Kai-shek was their hope of a new free China, which hope still feebly flickers here. This is another festival, the Festival of Hong Kong, which reaches far out to Yuen Long, one of the cities of the New Territories. And then there's the Moon Festival, and this deserves a special chapter all its own. It's at the time of the autumnal equinox, and moon cakes and gaudy paper lanterns play a very important part. This is a box of moon cakes sent to us by Dr. Lum. They're very special, very heavy with tradition, and suet and almond paste and nuts. And in the center, at least one hard-boiled pigeon egg. These are very special moon cakes, as you can see, and they had four or five eggs inside them. Notice the beautiful design embossed on each cake and the decorations on the outside box. The inside glass-covered container and the paper flowers all call for by tradition that goes back hundreds of years, I guess. You eat mooncakes on that special night, then as the moon rises, everyone walks out in the parks and up the sides of the mountains with the children carrying candlelit lanterns, and no one gets burned to death. It's a lovely, quiet, family sort of festival. Chinese New Year, all 15 days of it, deserves a special chapter. When you have a half hour, give us a chance and we'll explain. Here's one of the communist stores decorated for the occasion. And the symbols of prosperity, long life, and riches are much in evidence here, along with one of the many huge lanterns that are seen everywhere. I'll cover the flower part later. I'm not sure whether this comes under the heading of festival or not, but it's a very important part of Hong Kong life, tourism. Here, Casey and Jean Jones, neighbors from our lake in Florida, pose with the hostess at the Hong Kong Hilton dining room. They were here, like the sign says, courtesy of B.F. Goodrich, for whom Casey spins a lot of wheels. We were invited to a very special celebration given by Mr. and Mrs. Chung in honor of Arthur, their son, who was leaving for his junior year in college in South Carolina. Arthur was one of our best friends in those early get-acquainted days, and here he demonstrates for Virginia proper chopstick-reaching technique, while Mrs. Chung demonstrates what one does after reaching. My sister Betty says, "Shucks, I'll try anything," a few courses later, that is. Virginia isn't quite so sure. while Arthur and his dad cheer. She soon learned how slippery abalone and mushrooms can be. And Arthur's grandparents and assorted sisters and cousins register contentment at the end of the 12-course meal as we prepare to sip the small bowls of very strong Fukienese tea, you see. It's very bitter and powerful, but surprisingly good. One other very special and also very expensive dinner we enjoyed was on Christmas Day. I helped officiate at the wedding of one of the young men who received Christ at Bethany Chapel. This is Francis Chong, no relation to Arthur, and his bride-to-be, Rebecca, at a luncheon where we met her for the first time. Barbara Coe, the beaming lady on the right with one of her sons, is seated here by an American friend of her husband's. Jimmy Coe is a Hong Kong businessman and Christian layman. Barbara is worthy of a separate story, too. Ask us. A professional musician, singer of Western opera and Chinese classical music, trained in Europe and a local celebrity, she has a glowing personal testimony of her faith in Christ and sings at Bethany frequently. I've never known a singer to put more of her personal love for Christ into a song than can Barbara. She directs a local chorus and has her own TV programs. As a teenager, she escaped alone from Red China, and that's the other story. The young couple both sing in her chorus, and you can see them here in our home a few days before the wedding, as they call to finalize details of the ceremony and to bring the traditional presents. The wedding took place in a Chinese church in Wan Chai. Here I pose in a first-time-ever robe because tradition demanded it. The Navy tried for 22 years and failed, but that little happy couple standing there under the traditional floral bell with attendants and choir and her pastor, well, that was just too much tradition for this country preacher, and he robed happily. Jimmy and Barbara Coe, who are almost like parents to them, pose proudly with them. The pastor's son is on the right. Ain't he a dude? This was the first of three and maybe four traditional gowns the bride will wear. We may have missed one between this time of day and the wedding feast that night. There were over 400 guests, and the bride in her traditional brocade Chinese wedding dress charmed them all and dazzled us too with all that brocade and emeralds and gold, but she knew whose gold hair would set off her beauty best, and so she poses with Virginia. It's traditional for the bridal party to go to every table during the shark's fin soup course. There were three soups. Shark's fin is quite expensive and absolutely essential to a successful feast. And they must toast all of the guests. Now, that's a lot of toast, but tradition demands it. And Rebecca, a sweet Christian girl, played the part to perfection as demanded by the script. Does a little of the strain begin to show? Notice all the rings. So unlike the sweet, quiet, shy girl she is. But yes, you guessed it. Tradition demands it. Sometime during one of the last courses, about the 15th, I believe, the bride disappears and comes out for the final act in this outfit, white brocade, and again honors us by coming over to pose beside us. We look more tired than they do. After all, Christmas Day is our 35th wedding anniversary. I wasn't worrying about the soup. I'd had enough. There's a reception line at the end of the feast. Here are some of the bride's family saying goodbye over 400 times. And we prepare to leave with, yep, more presents. Barbara, because she sang the Lord's Prayer at the wedding, and me because I'm married to the prettiest Christmas Day bride ever. Yes, this had been our 35th wedding anniversary feast. How's that for planning and for being a cheapskate? And Barbara and Jimmy Coe offered to drive us home. I wish I had gotten back far enough to show the huge 30-foot-high floral announcement of the feast that hung over the entrance of the Ruby Restaurant. This, too, is tradition, and they constantly decorate the fronts of the larger eating places. There were four others that night at the Ruby, so you can see why restaurants here are so large. Would you care for some simpler fare? Here my sister Betty and I have dim sum at a Hong Kong restaurant. It's sort of cafeteria style, only they bring the food to you. And it's so informal, you don't even get a table to yourself. Girls circulate with little carts containing a particular dish or two, usually in little bamboo baskets. You signal her if you want one at the end of the meal. You pay according to the number of empty dishes. Our problem, not being able to understand what she was calling out or to read the sign that told what she had, was that the cover on the basket made it easy to get some goodie like octopus or sea cucumbers or jellyfish. I never did like the idea of taking little octopi or sea cukes from their mama, but at least that's better than duck feet. We did a few other things beside eat, like one Sunday after church, our New Zealander Sunday school superintendent and his family invited us to go with them to the top of Mount Taimoshan in the New Territories. This is Margaret Jennings and her son Warren. And here Don Jennings gets ready to, guess what, eat, naturally. They'd stopped after church at one of the street markets and bought fresh fruit, and we had a wonderful picnic high on the mountainside. The view back toward Hong Kong shows a portion of one of the world's busiest and most beautiful harbors, with ships from every nation in the world loading and unloading cargo. In the other direction, you can plainly see the mountains of mainland China. A couple of weeks later, on a biting cold day with 20 and 25 knot winds, monsoon warnings hoisted, we suggested to Griff and Ducky Henderson that we go on a picnic. They'd never been to Taimoshan, so even though they thought we had rocks in our head, they came by for us in their little VW, and we drove up and almost blew away until we reached the very crest and found an almost dead calm right behind the big rocks. It was unbelievable and so lovely. But as you can see, one of the many hill fires had swept over this area since our first visit. Now, while we appreciated friends with cars, Virginia and I have our own chauffeur-driven limousine service. Good old number 7 bus. We live just around the block from this spot where the number 7 bus comes to a squeaking, creaking, bone-crushing halt. And if you're lucky, you can get on and for 30 cents Hong Kong, about 6 cents U.S., ride all the way through Kowloon to the Star Ferry. Riding topside in those front seats, you really see all there is to see in one of the world's most interesting cities. No traffic problem, no gas shortage, no parking worries. We bear in our bodies the bruises, but number 7, we love you. The bus passes Baptist Hospital near our home and heads down Waterloo Road with Kowloon in the distance and Hong Kong on beyond. On the Hong Kong side, our favorite vehicle is the double-decker tram. Here again, you pass through unbelievably congested traffic, past sights and smells and sounds that are indescribable, all for 20 cents Hong Kong. Not very often does one get the whole topside to oneself like this, however. Frequently one stands, supported by the masses, as Chairman Mao would put it. The advantages of leaving the driving to someone else, I think, are self-evident. Each side street is a revelation of a new aspect of Hong Kong. As you pass slowly by on the tram, busy commercial streets stretch up toward the peak above Hong Kong. Or congested fruit and vegetable markets taking up the whole street, like you can see a block away from here. The tram passes right through some of those markets. Here's a close-up of just one of the thousands of carts and stalls that fascinated us and sometimes repelled us with their odors. The chicken feet look good enough for someone to eat, but not me. Paris has its sidewalk cafes, but Hong Kong has street cafes, and my Chinese student friends say that the best cooking in town is done right out in the open like this. I enjoyed watching these culinary artists at work, but resisted the urge to sample their wares, especially after I saw them wash dishes. And who said that flowers won't grow in the streets of a big city? They are very beautiful and quite cheap here. In back of the street stalls, if you're lucky, you can find a shop that takes up most of what might have been a sidewalk, displaying its baskets and dishes and goodness knows what. Virginia may know too, but we can't read the prices. You can see her here engaged in a favorite sport, browsing through a pushcart full of sweaters, most of which can be had for a dollar or two. She may be looking to see if the police are about to raid the street. Some of these hawkers have permits and some don't. When the police approach, you find out which is which. The little fellow in the foreground is enjoying the usual method of transport for the younger sweater girls and boys. Virginia was equally at home in the fruit and vegetable markets that filled the side streets, too. We really enjoyed the fruit in Hong Kong, especially mangoes, from all over Southeast Asia. The sign says, dried products of the sea. The only thing I would change is the word sea for smell. You don't have to see. There are rows and rows of these shops with acres of dried shrimp, squid, octopus, seaweed, sea cucumbers, jellyfish, and every other kind of fish. If you're downwind, you can easily get a cheap drunk with a deep breath. At least I could. And I'm Holland Dutch and love Limburger cheese. Those out in the open were easier on the innocent bystander, but they were just as obviously dead and dried. But Jenna and Dorothy braved the dead fish and live people along the side streets and survived happily. I showed them this lady barber working on the sidewalk and suggested they get their head shaved too, but they didn't have an appointment. Dorothy is more fortunate than many because she and her family have breathing room where they live in their ceramics factory. They make roof tiles and dragons and lions of China in their home, shown along the railroad track, which is down in a valley behind our home, just a few hundred yards. Dorothy showed us their well, a little pond made by a stream that trickles out of the Lion Rock Railroad Tunnel a few hundred yards beyond her house. Here she kneels and does the family washing for a family of six brothers and sisters and her parents. I guess what we enjoyed most about Hong Kong were the people. Here on the ferry, we admired this little doll, and his mother delightedly listens to his comments on Americans who all look alike to him. We discovered that to admire their children is the sure way to gain the acceptance of every parent and the way to instant friendship. The little ones grow up to be eager, lovable, though maybe not so cute, young people like these, some of the members of our Bible study group. John, above, is an artistically talented high school student. Alan works in an office and is a very new, struggling Christian. Esther works in a wig shop, is a new Christian, but is growing spiritually very rapidly. Daniel and Jeremiah, high school boys, are brothers, and they're all special. Of course, those aren't their real names. That is, the ones given them by their parents. None of them have Christian parents. This is our Hong Kong family. One of their greatest joys is to come and play badminton in our garden. None of them ever had, or will have probably, a yard. Most live in cramped space with large families. Millions of people live in a home that is one room 10 by 12 feet square. When I first visited Hong Kong, millions of refugees were living like this, out on the streets or sleeping in doorways. Actually, this fellow has it pretty good. He has a bed and fresh air and is located just outside a Buddhist temple where the begging is good. The solution was to build huge estates, actually more like an animal shelter than a home, but putting a family in a 10 by 12 room is a step better than letting them sleep in the streets. As many as 20,000 people will live in one of these estates. The average number in each cell is 10, I believe. How would you like to be the only Christian in that family of 10 and have 20 to 30,000 more people living in the same building, the probability being that none of them are Christian either? All cooking is done on the common balcony that runs the length of each floor. Each home has one door and one window. Sometimes the family has to sleep in shifts. There's just not enough floor space. Privacy? What's that? There is a toilet and cold shower area for each floor, shared by hundreds of families. The noise and smell of such a place is absolutely unbelievable. It's in these estates that our rooftop schools have been operating these past 15 years. Our chapels are located there too. It's only by a miracle of God's grace that out of this background of overcrowding, poverty, and seeming hopelessness, that two brothers could respond to the gospel, be born into the forever family of God, and with a burning desire to learn more about God's word, develop into a Jeremiah and a Daniel. Actually, their names are Chung Kam Chi and Chung Kam Chung, but they're proud of their Christian names and are burdened for the salvation of their family. We also had a weekly influx of Western-type kids with a couple of Orientals thrown in for tokens. Two ladies conducted a Bible club in Virginia, and I just do the day labor like cookies and clean up and such. Next door, the laborers erecting a bamboo scaffolding around the house, preparing to remodel and paint, can't figure out what's going on. They can throw this sturdy scaffold up in a few hours, and I'm told it's actually stronger than steel. You can see them working 20 to 30 stories high on these things, and they come down with a chop of a knife on the rattan binding. Other visitors in our yard were wild green parrots with long blue-green tails and bright red beaks and a red ruff like a turtleneck sweater. Some days we counted 15 at a time, but we couldn't get them to hold still for a portrait. Imagine standing here and seeing those trees just outside the windows full of beautiful parrots. We were blessed with lots of beautiful birds. There are strange contrasts in Hong Kong, as you have already seen. Breathtaking beauty such as this place, a Buddhist temple grounds with thousands of priceless bonsai trees. Dorothy and Jeremiah stand with Virginia in front of the Buddhist Home for the Aged, a most striking, luxurious, and completely untypical place. On the way there, you pass resettlement areas, which are bad enough, but many, many places like this where squatters living in shacks made of scraps eke out an existence, just. I couldn't bring myself to photograph them any closer. The Hong Kong government is building new housing complexes more modern than those first rabbit hutches, building as fast as they can and building new freeways to accommodate the booming traffic. But a steady stream of refugees who escape from China and hundreds daily who are shipped here on the train from Canton by the communists make the job almost hopeless. The crippled, the sick, those too old to work are sent to Hong Kong to become someone else's problem. We became involved in the life of many refugees. Can you imagine Barbara Fay Coe, the lovely, talented, well-known personality of Hong Kong, shown here after a concert in City Hall, as a frightened teenager, bribing a fisherman to allow her to stow away in his boat so she could leave China and her family to come to Hong Kong? There was Samuel Chan, our chapel treasurer, who came out with his mother, smuggled out in a packing crate, and Boris Chu, who's been afraid to go back to visit his 90-year-old father, but who somehow manages to send him money occasionally. But Dr. Chan Chun Wan became the one who crept into our affections and our life. You see him here on the night I baptized him and Esther, one of our Chinese daughters. He looks poised and content here, but his story would make a thrilling adventure movie. And Chan Chu, daughter of Dr. Chan, 10 years old, who swam out of Red China a year later, well, every good movie deserves a sequel, and her story and that of the other children would make a beauty. But Chan Chu shows me her skill at keeping the guillen, a foot shuttlecock, up in the air with her foot while saying, "Save that for another time." So I will. That guillen, by the way, became a source of a lot of fun and good exercise for me in Hong Kong. Here Daniel and Jeremiah demonstrate passing it back and forth using only the feet. I got where I could hold my own in a circle, but solo I'm too old and stiff. I leave that to super little girls.